This summer, we are inviting the major candidates officially running for governor to make their case to you. Earlier this month, we spoke to Republican candidate and former state representative Jeff Diehl. You can find that conversation on our website, radioboston.org. Today, we welcome State Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz. Senator Chang-Diaz, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Tiziana. Thanks for having me back.
So I'm going to start with a question that I did ask Jeff Diehl when we talked to him. What makes you, this year in 2021, better than anyone else to be governor now and to run the Commonwealth?
Well, Tiziana, first of all, I think it is bringing a strong set of values and convictions to the job. And that's something where, voters can see, a 12-year plus record of work in play for me, for my time as a state senator on Beacon Hill. I have seen how for working families, it is getting harder and harder every day to live here, to raise a family here in Massachusetts, and have really gone to work fighting for and accomplishing the systemic change that we need in order to confront those systemic challenges with the same determination and the same urgency that working families are living those problems. And that's things, ranging from education funding reform to criminal justice reform, to, pushing for 21st century transportation infrastructure, tackling poverty at its root.
Yes.
Really runs the gamut.
So let's dive into that a little bit, and we're going to come back on education. That's where I think you're arguably best known for your work. Let's pick up on some of these other systemic issues for working families. Highlight one or two that are serious priorities for you and specific things you want to do about them.
Well, TCMA, it's always hard to choose one or two because the issues are so intertwined. But, just to again, approach it from the experience of your typical working family here in Massachusetts. Housing costs are going up and up. Healthcare costs are going up and up. People are sitting, a long time in traffic, and that's time that, folks would much rather be at home taking care of their aging parents, helping their kids with their homework, being, civically active in their communities. And so those are the issues that are going to be first and foremost on my priority list. These are issues where, again, I'm interested in tackling them at their roots. It's been too long that Beacon Hill has been saying to families that just nibbling around the edges is enough, or that people should need to wait another year or another term for really profound change on these issues. So you asked for a specific example, and I'll go to economic development and economic opportunity and justice. Right, our wealth gap, and particularly our racial wealth gap in Massachusetts, is one of the largest in the nation. And we have folks who have been working and working their butts off, if I can say that on the radio, for year
after
year.
That word you can't say.
and not seeing a raise relative to inflation, right? That's a huge problem for our Commonwealth. Things that we can do to address that. One is, as you mentioned, education is an issue that I'm known for on Beacon Hill. It is not a silver bullet, but is the single biggest lever we have from a public policy standpoint for tackling both economic inequality and injustice and economic opportunity, right? Building opportunity. Because if we can equip young people with that strong foundation in life, they're going to be able to do the rest of the work, right? They're going to go far. And we also know that a prepared workforce is one of the things that is hamstringing our industries and our employers in Massachusetts. It's one of the most common frustrations that I hear from employers is
so
the difficulty of filling those
positions. Excuse me for interrupting you. There's so much I want to get to. What is a specific, for example, policy idea on an educated workforce that you're thinking about?
So I'll give you two right off the bat. One is that we need to follow through with discipline and with vigor our implementation of the Student Opportunity Act, which is something that I fought for and succeeded getting into law. It was a 5-year battle, right, to get it into law and was passed in 2019. But that's a 7-year phase-in process, and we have to do it with discipline, lest we not hit that goal. The second is something that so many folks really came face to face with during the pandemic, which is the need for universal, high quality preschool access in our state, right? Our childcare system is crippled in Massachusetts. It's on its knees. This is a problem that we had before the pandemic, but the pandemic really laid it bare for so many of us to see. And when we don't have a childcare system that is adequate and robust in our state, it just grinds so many other things in our economy to a halt.
Okay, so you've mentioned Beacon Hill. Actually, let's pick up on the Student Opportunity Act for a second. You were co-chair of that committee. You were unable to reach an agreement in 2018 despite a lot of effort. Senate President Karen Spilka pulled you off the committee. A deal was later reached. You know, you've said that power concedes nothing without demand. You have pitched yourself to some extent as an outsider, something else I do want to talk about in a minute. I am thinking about governors having to work with people from a broad swath of perspectives, pushing things through to the end. How do you think about, as an elected governor, balancing between standing for true principles, but also being willing to compromise to get things done?
Sure. It's a great question. Well, I think that the answer to that, a case study answer to that really lies in that sort of piece of the description that you gave there. Was just a quick snippet of sentence where you said, you know, and then a deal got done, right, on the Student Opportunity Act. And the truth is that in 2019, when we came back again, after we did not get a deal out of conference committee in 2018, we came back again, filed the Promise Act. It was a revised version of the bill. It brought more stakeholders to the table. It was a stronger coalition. And then we continued to do the organizing and really just, you know, building a humongous coalition statewide, urban, rural, suburban, north, south, east, west, across the state, in every school district, that made it impossible for Beacon Hill to ignore the interests of working families and their kids. And that is how we got the deal done on the Student Opportunity Act in 2019. It didn't just sort of happen organically by accident or by itself. And that, you know, that coalition building work is something that I did hand in hand with many other legislators, a bipartisan crew of legislators, and also legislators across chambers, right, House and Senate. And that kind of coalition building work is what I know is going to prepare me well and has prepared me well for the role of governor, because it is going to take that strong, that persistent coalition building work to get big structural change done on Beacon Hill. But I'm not a stranger to that work.
So you talked at the beginning of our conversation about your 12-year record, and you've spoken a couple of times here about Beacon Hill as if it's an other thing. In your campaign literature, your announcement, you said Beacon Hill insiders dragged mm-hmm. their feet every mm-hmm. step of the way. But aren't you Beacon Hill after 12 years in the state Senate?
Yeah. That's, you know, Tiziana, I'm glad you asked the question. But I think, though, that, you know, and I know you're asking on behalf of your listeners, anybody who's been watching my work over the past 12 years will know the many instances where I have been willing to stand up to the power structure, be it within my own party or from the Republican Party, and to call a question. Just like I can coalition build, I also am able to speak truth to power and then to build the coalitions to back it up in order to push through to a win, because it's not just about speaking truth to power for the sake of speaking truth, but, you know, real people's lives hang in the balance here, right? This is life trajectory changing stuff when we can inject another $1.5 billion into our public school system. You know, that's a whole generation worth of kids whose lives are going to be hugely different. So having that ability to do both, right, to make those judgment calls, to speak truth to power when it's needed, to do coalition building when it's needed, to get to the negotiating table and to make difficult choices, those are all things that people have seen me do many times over throughout my time on Beacon Hill, whether it was on criminal justice reform in 2018 or getting transgender equal rights passed in Massachusetts when states across the nation were going in the opposite direction in 2016, and then most recently on police reform this past year.
Okay, so let's talk about the role of the progressive in this race. You are branded a progressive. You are running against at least two other Democratic candidates that would call themselves progressive voices. This is a state that seems to like to elect Republican governors. So one, how do you distinguish yourself in the Democratic field and then also appeal to a broad swath of Massachusetts voters, given the leaning towards electing Republicans into that corner office?
Mm-hmm. Let me, I'm going to take those in opposite order.
Okay.
First, you know, on the question of sort of what does it mean to be progressive, and is that something that's going to connect with voters statewide? I think the answer is in the values, right, that underlie the progressive agenda, the things that I'm fighting for as a progressive, and that I think the movement is about, you know, things like giving every kid a fair and strong chance in life, making it so that we don't all have to sit in traffic for hours on end, making it so that you don't have to worry about going bankrupt if you have a medical emergency in your family, aspiring so that young people do not have to carry decades worth of student debt on their backs after working for years to get a degree. These are not radical ideas, Tiziana. These are old ideas, things that people have been wanting for years, and that are common denominators across so many demographics and so many regions and so many places where people identify on the political spectrum in our state. And so, you know, that's what I'm fighting for. And you can put whatever label you want on it. I do think that those are values that have broad appeal. And let me add to that list racial justice, right? As we are coming off this year of racial reckoning, which I hope will not be just one year, right? Because we have centuries worth of work to do there. But that is a broadly held value in the Commonwealth. People recognize that our systems are broken and we need to really do something different. So I do think that is a message that's going to connect because those are ultimately old and common values in our Commonwealth. Your second question.
I almost lost track. Go.
It's about distinguishing in the field, right?
Yes.
So I think the answer there is really about results, right? And I am proud that we have so many strong candidates in the field who are proud to profess themselves as progressives. I think that's a positive sign for the movement that we all care about. I am the only person in this field who has the record of delivering those real systemic changes over across many issues on Beacon Hill, and having the record of telling truths of power, right, and standing up, whether it is within my own party or again, you know, criticizing our existing Republican governor, and not just criticizing, but also achieving those results, achieving those wins on police reform, on vaccine equity, on criminal justice reform that translate into real results in families' lives.
So in our remaining time, you know, I'm listening to you, I'm listening to the agenda, I'm thinking about the moment. This is a staggeringly complex moment to lead a state. Between a 100-year pandemic, our reckoning with systemic racism, income inequality, the issues that you laid out. What comes first?
In terms of which issue do you tackle?
However you want to answer that.
Well, look, I think that the imperative before us, and also the good news, is that we should not limit ourselves to choosing one issue to work on at a time. One, because we're better than that in Massachusetts, right? We can walk and chew gum in Massachusetts at the same time. We have a ton of talent here in the Commonwealth, Tiziana. Medical talent, technological talent, education talent, creativity, and we have a lot of resources. We've gotten ourselves into this sort of scarcity mindset, but in fact, we are a very wealthy state. And so we have the building blocks that we need to confront these issues head on. And again, you know, not nibble around the edges and not put our head in the sand and, you know, sort of hide from these problems. And then I said good news, right? Good news is that when we tackle one, we are often tackling another at the same time, right? When we tackle our transportation infrastructure and we get ambitious about building 21st century infrastructure, we are also tackling in an aggressive way climate change, right? Which we need to be aggressive. It's an existential threat to our planet and certainly to our state. And so we can feed two birds with one hand there. Same right. thing again with education equity and education justice. When we get that right, we're taking huge bites out of income inequality, out of housing instability, out of racial inequality and racial injustice in our state. So we can do more than one thing at once.
State Senator and gubernatorial candidate Sonia Chang-Diaz. Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz, thanks for joining us. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
I hope you'll have me back, Tiziana. Thank you.
Thanks. So listening in on that conversation was Anthony Brooks, WBUR senior political correspondent. Anthony, thanks for joining us.
Sure. My pleasure, Tiziana.
I'm just going to start by asking you what stood out to you from our conversation there with State Senator Chang-Diaz.
Well, I was struck by the big ideas that she wants to tackle: climate change, wealth disparities, transportation reform, poverty, these big, big, big issues. And it's interesting because she's joining two other Democrats, former state senator Ben Downing, who's the first to get in the race, and Harvard professor Danielle Allen. All three are talking about these big, big issues. And it makes sense at this moment because, as Chang-Diaz mentioned, in this post-George Floyd moment, this pandemic moment, it really did lay bare these inequities, all the unfairness when it comes to healthcare, to the economy, jobs. So you've got these three Democrats in the race so far who are talking about these big issues that up until this point, I would say the corner office on Beacon Hill hasn't been engaged with yet. So it's interesting to see where their campaigns will go. I think that's what I was struck by listening to her.
And, you know, you heard us talk about this question about if she makes it through the primary, how she is a progressive and then gets elected in a state that loves to elect Republican governors. What do you think about that conundrum?
Well, you know, we don't know yet if Charlie Baker is going to run for a third term. My guess is he's going to. I don't say that with any kind of inside knowledge. I just think that he's going to. But let's assume he does. You know, polls suggest he remains incredibly popular, but the Democrats will try to make a case that his record is far from perfect. The initial vaccine rollout was problematic. There's a police overtime scandal. He's also open to criticism that he hasn't really resolved big challenges facing the T. And so here are the Democrats talking about big changes. Sonia Chang-Diaz just talking about transportation reform. But as we've said, polls suggest that Baker remains popular. So I think the big challenge for all the Democrats is whether, progressive or not, whether they can make this case that the governor can and should do more and do these big things. And it's not clear if voters want that from their governor. You know, I think that's the big question. So the Democrats' challenge is to make them want that. If not, I think Baker will be hard to beat.
And is the next thing you're watching for whether there are any big announcements from the candidates in question out there, like Baker and Maura Healey?
Absolutely. But, you know, question number one, is Baker going to run? Question number two, is Attorney General Maura Healey going to join the Democrats and sort of lead the pack, at least initially? Until we know those answers, we're just at the very early stages of this race, Tiziana. You know, we're barely lined up on the starting line. But it makes sense that these three candidates, who aren't super well-known statewide, have to start early, raise the money and try to get their message and raise their public profile across the state because they're the least well known.
All right. WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. It is going to be fun to watch all of this with you, Anthony. Thanks.
It's always fun. Thanks, Tiziana.